Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the very first episode of Short Rest for the Wicked, a show where a group of us friends come together and play a fun game of Dungeons & Dragons and share the resulting antics with you, our unsuspecting audience. My name is Nikola Trotsik, and I'll be the Dungeon Master for the story we are about to unfold for you, titled The Trials of the First Atlas. The story follows a group of adventurers who dare to embark on a grand expedition, funded almost exclusively by their own personal savings and supported only by their own determination and whatever aid they may stumble upon. An expedition to travel the various locations in the world, both known and unknown, to once and for all prove the planet's geometry and to document its complete geography with the world's first atlas. Before we get into it, a brief couple statements about our show. First is that this story, we're not playing Dungeons & Dragons professionally, nor are we playing to the standard of the Adventurers League. This game will feature some playtest content, a little bit of homebrew material to keep things spicy, and the occasional unorthodox handling of rules, depending on the scenario. If you're here for a game of D&D that contains only officially released content, unfortunately you won't find that here. But if you're here for an epic story chocked full of swords, sorcery, and swashbuckling, I can almost guarantee that you won't be disappointed. Second, is that we are not at this present time professional authors or voice actors. The material that will be written comes solely from our imagination and gets put together based on what we think will make it the most fun. And regarding voices, the players that you will get to hear from shortly have selected accents that they deem to be the most appropriate for their characters. They are not intended to be directly representative of real existing accents, but are rather inspired by them. I myself will have a variety of cadences to emulate and will do my very best to keep the audience entertained while not doing any accents a disservice. At the end of the day, we're a group of friends here to have fun, step into the shoes of fantastical characters, and tell a great story that we can, in turn, share with you. That's all I wanted to say before we got started. There's a story here to tell, and by gods, I will not let it go untold. Thank you once again for listening. We are Short Rest for the Wicked, and this is The Trials of the First Atlas. Short Rest! Short Rest for the Wicked! I think I want to start this off by saying that I am nervous as hell to get this on the road.
That's fair. That's a fair point.
Super fair.
This is totally fair.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Good shit.
But we must go forth nonetheless.
Yeah, we do.
I know I just said it not too long ago, but thank you for those of you who are listening, and thank you so much for tuning in to the very first episode of Short Rest for the Wicked, and also the very first episode of the story Trials of the First Atlas. Again, I already said it, but my name is Nick Trotsik. I'm going to be the Dungeon Master for you today and next week and the week after
Dungeon
that.
Lord.
Yeah, here in this house, we call you Dungeon Lord Daddy.
Nuance.
Damn straight.
Nuance.
Just Lord.
Yeah,
just
so Lord. Basically sit back, get ready for some adventure and profanity. What we're going to do, we're going to go around and just kind of say what your name is and the character you're playing, and then also include the saucy details like your race and your class.
My name is Karina Evangeline, and I play Evangeline Dumont. She's a human, and she's a rogue, and she's got a cloistered scholar background.
Yeah, she does.
Interesting.
She's a smart lady.
She sounds smart.
Are we just going around to me now?
I think so.
Well, hi, my name's Ethan Falk, and
husband.
I'm alcoholic.
Excuse me.
Hello, Ethan.
Hello there.
I will be playing Captain Jameson Decker. A hill dwarf who happens to have a boat that will be incredibly helpful for our navigation of the globe.
Oh, I didn't know you had a boat. That's interesting. That's cool.
I know, that's crazy.
Oh, I forgot to put the map out.
Anyways,
it's over there.
Guess it's my turn. Hi, I'm Keegan Zaporozin. I play Jennifer Helvedax, a drow ranger with the Outlander background. Yeah. Hi, howdy ho.
I keep on keeping on over there, brother.
Yeah, keep on keeping on. Amen. Amen.
And I play, hi, my name is Brady, Brady Moore, and I play Siliqui Helvedax. She is a dark elf bard with kind of a funky little acolyte background.
a funky little Acolyte background. We worked on it a little bit. It's a little bit custom.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Makes the most sense to kind of fall under Acolyte.
Fancy. I didn't say my background.
That's okay.
I'm a sailor.
We're guessing, considering your name is Captain and you own a boat, that you're just a sailor.
Did you even say what?
Yeah, he did. Oh, yeah, he did. He's a hill dwarf.
I did not say monk. I am a monk.
No, we don't care. We just know you're a captain.
You know, that's all that really matters.
Yeah. It is the most important detail. I imagine you lead with that.
My character is the boat.
Yeah, absolutely. The boat.
They call me the boat.
Oh, how about that, they?
How about that?
Oh, how about that?
I'm going to give you guys a little bit of exposition, and then we are going to get underway. Ladies and germs, Trials of the First Atlas. Open a history book, and it will tell you the stories of old. It will show you how, under the unpredictable ebb and flow of the universe, a permanent sequence of events was plucked and made true, defined and quantifiable. And though what's written before you is claimed to be true, you may hear it said that history is written by the victor. You may hear that history, though widely accepted as truth, even still is subject to the disposition of those who pass it on. Even the truest historians document only what they wish to be remembered, and even the grandest of bards accentuate or else fabricate parts of their prose to evoke the emotions they wish. In the end, many events of smaller caliber can be skewed or even rewritten at the mercy of their writer's bias. But then there are some events, so grand that not even the most biased writer can fabricate in a book, and no musician can skew its meaning in song. Open a history book, and it will tell you that some of these great events that changed the world of Nifirdu. The Brothers' War in Duriki ended in the year 1240 time, the Jenahaim metric. The Stardust Spell Plague began in the year 613 Gregoria, the Miquelon metric. The monstrous Faragin was slain in the year 67 years peace, the Kuxina metric. All different metrics used by their own nations to quantify the passage of time, and with that, document their history. As time passed and these three nations began to intermingle, all refused to surrender their metric and instead resorted to conversion between them. As an example, with time, the world was cursed and blessed with the invention of the Fusil in the year 1337 time, equivalently 965 Gregoria, and equivalently 97 years peace. I don't know about you, but I already have a headache. These metrics, among much, much more, all changed with a single map. Well, a book of maps. Maps collected from all over the world, reprinted and tied together under the same cartographic standard. With this book came a map of the world itself and was the first of its kind, the First Atlas. The Atlas was a culmination of a single expedition that was backed almost entirely by the will of adventurers and the support from their immediate allies. Though this expedition was rather huge, the plan remained quite simple. Travel all across the planet, from the known world to the new world, collecting existing and validated maps where possible, and charting the rest, amalgamating them into a singular atlas. This atlas that would show the world the planet's geography and geometry, all was the product of a dream. An Asgodian human girl's dream. The girl's name was Evangeline Dumont. A scholar and a progressive, Dumont was determined to put an end to the bickering between the scientific and religious communities in Ascodia by answering big questions that she herself came to ponder during her studies. Questions regarding the shape of the planet and the existence of other continents not yet discovered. Open a history book, and it will tell you the surface details of Dumont's expedition, but not its circumstance. It may tell you that she enlisted the help of the dwarven ship Captain Jameson Decker on her expedition, but not of the other crew members that played an integral role in our story. It may not tell you that Dumont's ideals for the expedition contradicted an ideal of the Ascodian religious community, and that her eager, assertive, and in some cases stubborn demeanor was poorly received by some in the Ascodian Scientific Council. As a result, Dumont's expedition received little support. Furthermore, your history book may not tell you that upon learning that Dumont was closely affiliated with two sisters belonging to the race of Drow, a mysterious and historically malevolent race, the support for the expedition, all but dissolved. At this point, it was no longer an expedition exclusively for knowledge or truth, but also a challenge. For as long as Evangeline Dumont journeyed side by side with siblings Siliqui and Jennifer Helvedax, the expedition would be a testimony to breaking the stigma of carrying the bloodline of a drow. With fleeting financial support from the Ascodian Scientific Council, and complete lack thereof from the Ascodian religious community, Dumont pressed on in her expedition alongside her formidable and loyal companions in pursuit of truth. Though the reputation of Dumont and her companions may be subjective, the evidence held by the Atlas would not be. With the first Atlas came an adventure of epic proportions, a story not so easily affected by the bias of others. After all, it's hard to feign ignorance when almost all the world was left quite literally untouched by our story. But between every major milestone in the expedition came all the other stories and experiences, forgotten over time or not retained by history. How to get in that in between? You might say it's impossible, unless you were there. Open a history book, and it will tell you that Dumont's expedition was completed, but that it confirmed the planet's geometry, established the world's first atlas, kickstarted a scientific, sociological, and economic reform, and unified the world's calendars. What it will not tell you are the trials and tribulation endured to make it there. Was the truth exaggerated and skewed by the bards and historians that supported Dumont? Perhaps Dumont herself encountered dark truths about the world that even she could not bear to make public to the people. Or perhaps truths and details of the expedition were stifled by rumor and societal opposition. Or perhaps it's simply not in the curriculum, and the events that transpired remained beyond the reach of common knowledge. One can only ever change that which is accepted as truth, and not truth itself. For somewhere beneath all the fabrication and mystery lies the story of what really happened. How better to see that untouched truth of history than to be present in the moment as it's plucked from that unpredictable ebb and flow and birthed into existence? So close your history books and open your ears, for in the year 1451 time, in the continent of Jennaheim, in the kingdom of Ascodia, in the city of Twinmere, the true story begins with a horse-drawn carriage. The only sound you hear is the knocking of the horse's hooves against the cobblestones as you ride down the streets in Twinmere. The carriage rocks back and forth. As you prepare to arrive at the docks of Twinmere, the four of you sit inside this carriage. How do you feel?
I feel like we did it, because you said, in your wonderful expedition, you're like, they did it!
Sweet. Podcast over. We're done. We did it, guys. We're done. We succeeded. We're on our way back.
Perfect.
Ta-da. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, we start with the conclusion.
Where's my money? Yeah. I'm the poorest out of all of you. Where's my money?
I would argue that I am.
Yeah, you have assets, though. Oh, that's
true. Yeah.
Notice I say it was completed, but I didn't say who made it there.
I think Siliqui would be a little bit excited, but keeping a stoic, obviously, position in this. But like the fact that she gets to leave this place and travel the world is probably just at the top of her mind right now.
Yeah, I'd say Jennifer is definitely the same.
We're going to the docks right now, yeah.
That's correct. Currently, you're in the carriage, having just tied up any loose ends, gathered your equipment, particularly you, Evangeline, from inside the city.
Yeah.
Gathered your stuff, and then having basically Jameson and the sisters as your escort have gotten inside of this carriage, paid a halfling man who's a carriage driver to just take you to the docks, where Jameson's ship, the Odyssey, is going to be waiting to take you away.
Yeah, I'm already out of the carriage.
You're already out of the carriage.
She's too excited. She's got all her stuff. She's like,
she's walking beside it.
Well, did we arrive to this boat?
I thought we were
just walking beside this carriage.
No, I thought he said that her carriage had pulled up to the dock.
No, it's still moving.
We're going.
You're going to it, but it's still.
She's sitting and she's bouncing and she's ready.
Is my first mate with us, or is he already down by the boat?
No. The previous conversation that you would have had with Eret is that he was going to make sure that the ship was prepared and ready to go.
Awesome. Dope sauce. I'm asleep.
You're asleep.
I'm sleeping on this carriage ride. I don't know how long it is. I'll grab a couple minutes of ease.
Yeah, it's maybe like a half hour. Half hour. Half hour.
What a lovely nap.
Yeah.
Great nap.
The universities are pretty close to the center of the city. So it's roughly pretty close to what you think is going to be the end of this trip. Approximately 25, 26 minutes into this trip, you feel the horse carriage stop.
Good Lord.
Shaking you awake, Jameson.
Are we here now?
I'm ready to go. I open the door and I get out.
You open the door and you, as soon as you open the door, you are met looking down at this very burly and very, very excited and optimistic dwarven woman. She is very muscular, has a ear-to-ear grin, and she looks back and she goes, "Well, hello there. So you're this smart lady that I've been looking forward to meeting."
Yes, I am. Evangeline Dumont.
I was getting there. Is the captain with you?
Yes, he's just inside.
Is this who I think it is?
This is Helen Rockbone.
Cool. Is it afternoon? Is it morning? What time of day is it?
It's the morning.
Morning to you.
Morning, Captain. We've got a wee bit of an issue.
Oh, fucking, what is it?
Well, you see, how do I put this exactly? The Odyssey's landlocked, Captain.
Excuse me?
We've had a series of right proper fellows from the church show up.
Is the crew all right?
The crew's all right. We're carrying out your plan as instructed, Captain. I need to have a word with the driver. Got word from Eret. He'll be waiting down the street. I was supposed to stop you right here. If you go down that alleyway inside the warehouse, you should find him.
Decker, what does it mean where the ship is landlocked? What does that mean?
Well, we can't go out to sea yet.
Context clues, Yennefer. Context clues.
Seems...
I'm just simply...
seems like a bit of the religious folk of the town don't want us to be going out.
They don't particularly like me.
What was your first clue?
No, we're all well aware of that.
Yeah.
Yes, very.
Right, well, I suggest we... follow along with what Helen told us, head down to the warehouse.
Right, okay, I have to fill in the driver on the plan. Just down the alleyway, Captain. Don't worry, your plan's gonna work.
All right.
Your plan's gonna work.
It better.
What's my plan?
Captain, unbeknownst probably to your allies, you don't have a plan.
Cool. All right, I'm rolling with it.
Yeah. Helen seems to be. You can make an insight check for me if you want it.
I would absolutely love to.
First roll!
First roll!
That's an 11. What's my insight?
Completely average.
13 total.
I would say that's enough. You can tell that Helen seems to be quite convinced that this is your plan, and we are following your plan that you constructed.
I am willing to bet that Eret has a hand in this.
At this point, Helen moves, clears a way through the doorway outside of the carriage, and goes up and begins talking to the driver of the carriage.
Can I see if I can hear what she's saying?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead and make a perception check.
Second roll. Woo!
Woo!
Okay.
We're just going to do that every time?
Yeah.
18.
You can hear just about everything that Helen is saying. Not a lot of it is kept on the down low. Mm-hmm. She starts talking and she goes, right, okay, so I've talked to the party and here's what's going to happen. Okay, there's a little bit of a disagreement between the party and the people who have landlocked our ship. Look, now, I like you. I do not want you to get hurt. However, going to need some kind of diversion. So she points at her backpack and it has like a wooden barrel that looks to be sticking out of it, a small barrel sticking out of her backpack. She goes, I'm going to be planting this inside the carriage, okay? When this signal goes, this carriage, and she throws her hands up. You understand?
Small question for everybody, but who the hell is going to carry my suitcase? Because it's fucking heavy.
Well, you've got two arms, don't you?
Do you see the size of them?
Well, you should have fucking packed lighter.
For what? A long distance journey around the world? I think you're mistaken, my
friend. Surely you jest.
I don't know. All I know is that if you can't carry what you've got, you should gotta drop stuff.
There is no way I'm dropping my stuff.
All right.
I can help you take...
Partway through Helen's discussion, she looks back at you and goes, well, go on then.
Oh, just now. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Let's grab our stuff.
Evangeline, you're gonna trunk.
Okay, so Evangeline, you step out.
Yeah.
As you step out of the carriage, why don't you describe who's stepping out of the carriage?
Oh, crap.
Rifles through the notes.
Okay. So, Evangeline, she's 25, 5'5", pale skin, blue eyes, black hair, almost the exact opposite of her dark elven friends.
That is just stats, and I know someone who can look extremely ugly and stick to those stats, and I know someone who can look extremely beautiful for the stats. Give me some juice, girl.
Yeah. Give me some. Okay. We want some aesthetic, my sister.
Like, what?
I'm sorry. Why not?
Give something for the fan art.
Okay. She has a slender, muscular build, and she wears a black tight leather armor and pants, which is very rare for women in these parts. She wears a dark navy cape and a satchel on her right side that carries her maps and documents and paper and ink and all that. And on her left is her rapier and dagger. And then, again, another dagger on her right side, upper thigh, hidden by the cape. Her hair is always pulled up in a ponytail or a bun, and she wears high knee boots. And she also wears a necklace of a functioning compass that her father handcrafted for her.
Beautiful. You step out of the carriage, and you see Helen having this exchange with the driver, and then you can clearly see the alleyway leading to some ship-side warehouses that she referred you to.
Hey, lovely, Captain. Just so you know, the plan here is to blow this fucking carriage up.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that unless you knew that from the beginning, and I'm going to do an insight check on him.
Ooh, that's very good. I got a 18 again, except with different modifier. 18.
Okay.
Is he showing that, like, oh yeah, this is totally to plan. This is exactly what I had going on.
That's what I'm going for. Do you want me to do a
deception? I would say deception, for sure.
All right. With my grand old... What is that, a minus one?
Attaboy.
That's a crit.
Okay. Do you really?
I crit on that.
Alright, cool.
How do you play this off, Jameson?
So you knew you were going to blow this couch up?
Well, it was more of a contingency.
So then it's your problem that I have a giant carriage, or a giant suitcase full of stuff. You could have warned me about that, and I would have sent my stuff earlier.
Right, right. Helen, do you have any plans for this rest of the morning?
Well, as soon as I'm done here, why?
Would you mind taking how many fucking bags you got?
I just got a suitcase.
Would you mind taking the suitcase for me?
She, like, pulls up her already short sleeve, revealing muscles to reveal more muscles. And she goes, have you seen this? I'll be fine carrying them, Captain.
Why do you think I hired you?
She's my favorite.
I thought it was because I was pretty.
You're absolutely stunning.
I'm just yanking your leg.
I fucking know you are, so.
Yanking your leg.
Take the suitcase and get the fuck out of here.
All right, sweet. I'll go along with whatever plan that you have then.
Cool. Down the alleyway we go.
Who's stepping out of the carriage next?
I'll hop down as I'm...
Cool. Go ahead and describe yourself.
Hopping out of the carriage, you will see, standing at a whopping 4'2", buck 77, a ginger dwarf who with a... probably a little bit too long, like it was made for a different race, but a coat, as you imagine most sea captains would have, kind of billowing out behind them, and just the most gorgeous hat you see you've ever seen, with a big old red feather. You know, I've got a holster with a pistol, flintlock pistol, as well as a, I believe, did we say it was a cutlass?
It was a cutlass.
Cool, a cutlass with the statistics of a short sword.
Scimitar. Yes.
My bad. Yes.
Yes.
yeah. Blue shirt underneath his coat. Big old ginger beard, long red hair pulled back into a tight ponytail, man bun type deal.
Okay.
And freckled.
And as you step out from the front of the carriage, still partially in this conversation, you can see actually that the halfling driver now has beads of sweat on the side of his face, and she's partway through this conversation ushering the four of you. She says, go.
One more thing, though. If anyone perceptive on his slightly open shirt will notice a rose tattoo peeking out on his the left side of his chest.
That is the details I am talking about. Mm-hmm. I love little rose tattoos.
Yeah, it's a fairly large size.
Sorry, let me rephrase that. I love giant rose tattoos.
Yeah. You'd get the impression it goes on. There's like vines and
I'll tell you what impression
it.
I get.
How about you?
I guess...
Jennifer, Mary Liz.
Whichever. Jennifer is going to step out, and as she steps out, you see a 5'4", athletically lean-built drow woman. At the good drow age of 140, she does look like she's about in her mid to early 20s. Red eyes, dark gray skin. Her hair is white, but goes down all the way to, like, maybe just between her shoulder blades. She has dark brown leather armor with, like, a nice, say, olive green cloak. And while brimming with excitement, you can definitely see above her lip going from, like, the from the left inner side of her cheekbone to the left side of her top lip, you see just a scar. Also holstered on either side of her, on her right side is a dark, I would say a very dark colored short sword with a palm. On the pommel is a red gem, and on the left side is very similar, similar sword, dark blade, but on the pommel is a blue gem.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Are you cloaked or anything?
I would say because us drow are very sensitive to the sunlight, I would say the hood is definitely up until we are able to find something to shield our eyes.
Well, fun fact, our DM has also said that we both have aviator glasses.
Right, okay.
You actually?
Hood is down, yes, they do. Rocking aviators. Yeah.
That is beautiful.
She is so rocking aviators.
Yeah, non-magical, but just some fashioned sunnies.
Yeah, oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Mirrored lenses too, baby. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sweet. Yeah.
And the last person to step out of the carriage.
I don't even think I step. I think I strut because Siliqui wanted to make sure that she looked divine to meet all this new crew. So she is probably, my goodness, do I have so many of outfits. But I think she's wearing her classic medieval dress, which has a very low cut. And it's got that classic embroidery around the edges. Mm-hmm. But when she walks, it flows. And it looks like her hair is... she works really hard to make it look like she woke up like this. But her hair is actually like probably been teased and coiffed for a good long time to make it look as beautiful as it is. She is flawless. She is young. She is hot. And she is not, for the first time in a long time, covering up the fact that she is a drow. So I think she wouldn't have a hood. She has a dress with a hood, and this isn't one of them. But she's in high heels, she's in her aviator glasses, and she's got this immaculately designed rapier at her side, and then maybe a small pouch. But it doesn't look like she has a backpack, doesn't look like she's... Out of everyone in the group, you'd be like, I bet she lives here because of the lack of...
Adventuring gear.
She's not even in armor, she's just like... willing to rock it out and maybe mildly annoyed that she now has to scuttle away into a warehouse to get this expedition.
Nobody gets to see me.
Yeah. So I think she's the kind of person that when she walks down the street, everyone would tilt their head. So I'm not going to try to be stealthy. I'm just going to go along with the plan, but I would be the last one out.
Alrighty. And as you step out, Helen apparently finishes her conversation with the carriage driver and immediately scuttles over to the open door, drops her backpack on the ground and starts to retract this wooden barrel. And as she does that, you can see it's got winds of copper on it and it seems to have like a small red gem planted on the top. And she kind of lifts this up and kind of scoots it forward into the carriage and kind of like taps her fingers together a little bit.
Captain, is that a regular build or is that one of her specialties?
She takes a ton of pride in her work and I wouldn't want to credit that anywhere else.
Well, I mean, credit where it's due, Captain. A lot of this was actually Jurgen's design. He's a little bit pedantic in certain places, but this is some fine handiwork. Credit where it's due, though. It's a team effort.
Alright, let's get the hell out of here.
Fucking great.
Uh-huh. Oh, this is gonna look beautiful.
As we're walking into the back alley, mm-hmm. I'm going to turn to my captain and be like, just so you know, if I left my trunk in that, the explosion would have been a lot larger than you were expecting.
Good to know.
Yes.
Just so you know, I'm very well aware of that.
What do you have in there?
Highly flammable stuff.
It's impolite to ask a lady about what's in her fucking bag.
You would expect a wizard war to have been happening. That's how big the explosions would be.
Yeah. I won't deny I'm curious, but like I said, it's impolite to ask.
For sure. As you, Evangeline, would you be first as you're kind of walking down this alleyway?
Oh, yes.
Okay, for sure.
Oh, yes.
You continue down the alleyway. It's surprisingly empty in this part of the town mm-hmm. at this part of the day. As you go forward, you do find the door leading to the warehouse that Helen referred you to. Do you try the door?
Yes.
Okay. The moment you open the door...
It's trapped and you die.
Hooray!
Roll a new character.
It's not locked.
No, no. What was that about history books mentioning her name?
Shit.
It's a wooden door. Uh-huh. It's not locked. Yeah. You try it, and it opens towards you.
Okay.
And as you sort of pull it, immediately on the other side of the door, there is a tall figure. The figure looks to be wearing sort of like these leather Renaissance era boots. They seem to have a long leathery cloak about them, and they are facing you, but their hat is tilted down. The hat looks indistinguishably to be that of a bounty hunter.
Oh shit.
Uh-oh. And you are face to face with this person the moment you open the door.
I'm just going to close the door. Okay.
You slowly close the door, and from underneath the cloak, the figure's hand shoots out and catches the door from closing. And you watch as the hat tilts upward. You hear a familiar voice that says, "Care for a lift, Miss Dumont?" Revealing the face of Eret.
Oh!
I was about to say, I trust my crew. I don't think anyone would have tried to sink us right away.
Like, yeah, we haven't even insulted anyone yet.
Immediately, come on.
Eret, you gave me a start. What is going on?
You like the hat?
No.
I think it looks lovely on you, darling.
Please see, stop.
That's the kind of support that I need in my life.
Uh-huh.
Right, Eret, you want to fill these boys in, sorry.
Don't worry about it.
You want to fill these lasses in on the plan?
Right. Your plan.
100%.
Fill them in on your plan. Yes. Right. Walk with me.
Okay.
I'll walk. Certainly.
As you sort of, he waves you in one by one, and as you walk past him, he kind of addresses you one by one. Evangeline, as you pass, he kind of gives you like a chill kind of, Angie. As the two drow sisters pass him, he just kind of like tips his hand and goes, ladies. And then finally, when you pass it to Jameson, he immediately goes serious and goes, Captain?
I grab him by the shirt and pull him down to my level and go, what the fuck's going on? Very, very quietly.
I'll explain on the way, Captain. Odyssey's landlocked. Some asshole named Richard from the church. Look, I'm just following your plan.
It's always something, isn't it? All right.
He pokes his head out the door and he goes, Helen, let's go. And you watch as Helen just like heaves this huge trunk out of
How
the
How big is this trunk?
It weighs 25 pounds without anything in it.
Oh,
dear Lord.
Pardon?
It's a big boy trunk. It right? is a I'm traveling the world trunk, not a whimsical little backpack you go hiking in.
Immediately the weight just drops it to the ground and Helen has to drag it across a couple cobblestones.
What's her strength score?
Not good.
Okay.
Helen?
It's pretty good, but not grand, okay. Per se. She drags it across the ground for a couple cobblestones before she eventually finds a comfortable position to grab it and start carrying it. She can hardly see over the top of the chest as she waddles over here, and she goes, coming!
Eret, do you want to just give her a hand with that?
No, I think she's got it.
All right, that's your call.
And
you think she's gonna be good?
She squeezes. Helen squeezes her way through the door, and Eret closes the door behind. And inside this building is actually like a ship building warehouse. You can see the rails on the ground that lead into the water.
Lovely.
And Eret starts to walk around the outside, and he goes, "Okay, so here's the situation." The Odyssey's landlocked. Not too long ago, we had, like I said, some dick named Richard. He's from the church. Church of Joaquin, the one who's been after your ass for a little while, Angie. They got a couple of men, two men on board the ship. The rest of them, doesn't look good, Captain. They got 12 of them on the dock. They're armed with fusils, a couple of them. The rest of them just seem to have hand crossbows and daggers. They're waiting on the carriage to show up.
And good Lord, we're going to explode that around those people?
Oh, yeah. And almost in echoing unison, Helen goes, oh, yeah.
Look, they're just doing their jobs.
See, right? That is the genius behind my partnership with Jürgen. You see, it's structurally built that it's not actually going to burst around the sides, but it's mostly going to shoot directly upwards. And on top of that, a lot of it is just chemicals to add pigment to the explosion. So, it'll be distracting. Lethal?
Very unlikely. Distracting. Very.
Well, unless someone's dumb enough to get on top of the thing.
Yeah, well, I'm okay with those odds.
Okay, well, if they're dumb enough to get on top of the carriage, they probably deserve whatever happens to them.
Shouldn't be reproducing, right?
Yeah. Makes sense.
Eric kind of like adjusts his gaze between the five of you and goes, right then, and starts walking towards the end of the warehouse.
Yeah, I'm following him.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll follow.
As you get to the end, he peeks his head around the corner and then pulls back immediately and goes like, okay. Yeah, I was afraid this was going to happen. Okay. The only way that we're going to be able to get to the Odyssey is under the water.
All right. Interesting.
But, so, another question. How the hell are you getting my trunk through the water?
The sash that he has, he wheels it around to reveal a bag, and he pulls the satchel open, and he goes, well, go on, get in.
You want us to get into a place where it has limited oxygen?
Yes.
Okay, so, correct me if my memory is incorrect, but we use a lot of those because space is crap in the underdark, or the...
Nether.
Nether, sorry. I'm pretty sure that it's 10 minutes of oxygen per person. You can get us to the boat in 2 minutes?
He takes the hood of his cloak and pops it over top, revealing sort of two kind of mandibles on either side, and he kind of he rubs the fabric on the cloak, and he goes,
that's what I got this for. Make the process a whole lot faster. Really had to pull some legs to get Malik to lend it to me. Hey, as soon as I told him it was your plan, he caved.
Good. I just nod.
Lord, I'll make a pact with you. I will rupture the shit out of that bag if I start for a moment losing any sort of breath.
He puts his hand in and he goes,
she will do it.
In a time like this, you have my word.
All right, put the trunk in first. I need something to sit on.
Helen brings over this this huge cumbersome trunk and starts to try and find an angle to try and weasel this thing, but then upon contacting the bag, you watch as it just expands to envelop, and it pulls Helen with it. She just inside the bag.
Is this a regular? Because I don't know if all of our weight is going to fit inside of that, or does it look? I'm going to assume that the dungeon master's thought of all these, and I'm going to jump into the bag.
And he gives a dungeon what?
Oops. I walk in and I just go like, don't worry about it. I'll see you on the other side, sweetie.
I'll see you.
I jump in.
Angie? They're running out of air right now.
Yeah, like a terrible plan. Okay, I'll step in.
Don't suppose you have a better idea, he says as you kind of disappear into the bag.
Right, me too then.
You too, Captain.
All right.
And all
take the hat off and then jump in.
Yeah, and all of you appear just inside this black void. It is pitch black. Those of you with dark vision, who are 4 out of the 5 of you, can see each other. And
Jameson,
little...
would you do me the favor of getting your foot out of my ass?
Well, I'd love to. I just don't know where my foot is.
Jameson, you better do what she says. I do not want to think about where your foot is right now.
Let's stop talking because we're wasting oxygen.
No, I legitimately can't feel my foot.
I will make sure it's permanent if you do not remove it.
Right, stop it.
Well, we're just having this conversation for the next 2 minutes.
You're having this conversation in real time,
yeah.
And it does feel, just in the slightest bit because you're looking for it, that the air is starting to get a little bit thinner.
Don't.
I won't.
And a little bit thinner.
Oh.
At this point...
I hold on
to Siliqui's hand. Just go make eye contact with her.
Your eyes are beautiful in the underdark, did you know? Or in the dark vision. Did you know that?
I know, isn't it? Yours are stunning as well.
And suddenly a beam of light shines in from just above you, and you watch as this, it just opens. So it's within arm's reach that you can just reach out.
Does it immediately fill the bag with the smell of chemical explosion?
It is filled with salty air.
Ooh.
Well, that'll be the cue.
Let's go.
Let's hop on out.
Hop out.
Okay. Men first.
Yeah. I believe it was Jennifer. Oh. You came out first.
Yeah.
Okay. you come out and immediately you hear Eric whispering, careful, 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 careful. And as you emerge from the bag, you notice that he's dripping wet from head to toe and he's holding onto a rope ladder. And as he's bringing you out, he's like guiding you. He has your forearm and he's guiding you to a second rope ladder that is dangling over the hull.
I'd like to say to him,
do you need some help at all?
I could probably use some help carrying the rest of them. If you want to take this, and he hands you the bag, and he's like, I'm going to clear things up on top.
All right.
Keep it down.
Oh, right. Good Lord, I thought he was going to have to stare up at me.
And you watch as Eret slowly kind of climbs his way up the rope ladder, up the hall, and starts to kind of peek his way over.
All right.
Do you help the people out of the bag?
Yeah, I'll do that.
For sure.
Captain, you first.
Yep. I'll climb on out.
Yep. And you come out of the bag, you find your place on the rope ladder. All of you come out one after another.
I want to be second last.
Helen pokes her head in, and she's like, I would suggest we leave the heavy-ass fucking crate inside the bag for the time being.
Helen, you have such a way of words. Let's do that.
You know, I really do try. And then you just hear from above Eret go, shh. And Eret slinks just up on the deck, out of view from you guys. Are you guys going
to
go up?
I have to wait for two other people before me.
Yeah. Am I on the top of the ladder?
Yeah.
Cool. I'll throw a perception check to see if I can hear what's going on up there.
Could I do that as well? I was like, yeah, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. Make some perception checks.
I'll just wait at the bottom.
With me. 18.
17.
18, 17. Yeah, I will say both of you sort of shimmy your way so you're side by side going up these ladders. And you don't hear very much, but once you sort of slip just your eyes above the deck, you can see Eret is... He's sneaking his way behind a figure. The figure has a gray and blue robe, and on the back of it, it has the crest of Joaquin, which is a gold coin with the side profile of a woman's face. And you can see that he's sneaking up behind this person who has his back to the rest of the ship because he is looking off at the docks, and you can see your carriage start to pull up. Eret kind of, he looks back over at you, Captain, and kind of beckons and gestures to the back of one of these figures as he slinks over to the second one.
Yeah, I'll follow suit with I imagine you want some sort of stealth roll.
I would love a stealth check, please.
Do you want us all to do that just so we have a preemptive?
Yeah. Only if you're going to be going up there.
Okay. Well, I have to wait for two people, so I will.
14?
Well, I'm last, so 14? I have to wait for you anyways.
10 plus I'm 4. Already.
You're not going up? No, I'm waiting for you guys. I'm holding the bag.
As you step, you hear the ropes just kind of creak under your movement.
Mm-hmm.
But you manage to slip up onto the deck. And as you look to the left and right, you can see a couple of your crew members just kind of standing there nonchalantly, and they give you a subtle nod as soon as they see you. And you manage to get within 10 or so feet behind this figure.
Cool. I'm waiting for... I imagine we're waiting for the fucking thing to blow up.
Helen pokes her head out, or she finishes climbing out of the bag, and she goes, can someone probably help me lift up to the front? I don't know, I think this thing needs a line of sight, and she pulls out this jerry-rigged kind of wooden stone detonator type device with a blinking red gem on top.
Angie will hoist her up.
I can help her out.
How far away is the guy in front of me from the edge of the boat?
From the edge of the boat?
Yeah.
He's right on the railing.
Oh, that's nice.
Same with the other guy, who Eret has now gotten 10 feet behind.
That's good. That's real good.
That's cool.
So as soon as the thing blows up, I want to do a nice, just push him over the edge.
A shoving attack? We can totally do that. Okay. As you, Jameson, see the carriage approaching, you can watch a figure who's in a similar robe but who's clearly more decorated. You watch as he, just from the distance, probably like a good 60, 70 feet away, pulls his cape to the side, revealing a pistol on his hip. And starts to walk over to the carriage. He walks up to it, grabs the door, pulls it open, and Eret turns and quietly points at Helen. She lifts herself above the deck, and she goes, "Viva la revolution!" or something like that, and starts and presses the thing, and nothing happens.
Oh, cool. No.
I'm still... She shouted, I'm pushing the dude.
Okay, for sure.
I imagine Eret's doing something similar.
Crap.
Go ahead and make an attack roll with advantage because you're effectively hidden.
Is he shoving?
He's shoving, yeah.
It's an opposed roll.
Yeah.
Okay, my higher is a 16 plus... that's right. I'm unarmed, so I get to use dexterity.
Yes, sir.
So, dirty 20.
With your hand or with your foot, Captain?
I had 10 feet. two steps and a big, like, vertical, or, sorry, horizontal jump, both my feet into his back, and I'm just pushing him.
Connects and just kind of right over the railing. Splashes into the water.
Oh,
you can see a couple people, a couple of these members of the church on the pier. They sort of turn and look, and you hear Helen, like, as she's pressing this thing repeatedly, she's like, you know, I could have sworn this thing was supposed to boof. And you watch this rumble just echoes across the docks, and you watch as the top of the carriage, only the top of the carriage, gets blasted sky high, and just this cascade of smoky reds and pinks and blues as Eret also draws his fist back and connects with the back shoulder blade of the other guy, and he topples also over the edge.
I offer my hand to Siliqui and Evangeline, going, that's our cue, come on.
Hey.
Up we go.
And you all climb onto the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I want to shout out, get your legs wet, lads. We've got a schedule to keep. That was not my character voice, but you get
close.
The idea.
That's okay. And already at the helm, you can see Haggis. And he goes, hey, cuz, throw up the sails, boys. And you watch as the sails unroll immediately and fill with air. I want everybody to make dexterity saves, please.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no.
Ooh, 22.
Ooh,
that's close. 13.
21.
13.
13? No, yeah. That's actually okay. That's actually okay. The ship lurches forward, and on the dock, there is just a confused array of people are trying to help this figure who went over to the carriage. People are turning around. They're drawing hand crossbows, and as the ship lurches forward, you all feel yourself lose your balance, but catch yourself immediately. You watch as one of the crew members, I'm going to pick on Efik.
All right.
Jameson, you recognize him from just up on top by the helm, just eats it, falls face first on the ground as the ship lurches forward. And Eret goes, duck for cover, don't shoot back! And everyone ducks down as you see a couple bolts lurch over the edge of the ship.
Are we tied off?
Are you tied?
Yeah, is the boat tied off?
No. You can see that there is a wooden bridge, and as soon as you start to pull forward, it starts to twist.
Okay, I just really wanted to make sure that we weren't going to go like 20 feet and then just stop because we're tied off to the...
You watch as a figure draws their hand crossbow, draws a short sword, and starts to run up this bridge. The ship moves forward and the bridge snaps and the guy falls down into the water. And you have set sail.
Yay!
Yay!
We did it.
Let's go!
Right. Where are we going then?
I think
who are you
know.
Saying that to?
No, sorry, I was making a Lord of the Rings joke.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Got that.
As you head out, there is a scattered cheers from the crew.
Cool.
Yep. Yep.
And I'm gonna play.
Oh, I'm cheersing too. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
As the ship takes off into the Dugin Sea, and as you collect your stuff. Eret kind of walks over to you, Evangeline, mm-hmm. with his arms crossed, and he goes, so, do we have a heading, Miss Dumont?
I don't know.
You, thinking about it, thinking about it geographically, you make your way up to the helm,
mm-hmm.
Probably with the rest of your party, Eret included, and you pull out your atlas.
Woo!
He said the word that's in the name.
Oh!
We did it.
All right.
Cool map.
Very much so incomplete.
I'm going to post a picture of this somewhere.
Totally. Very much so incomplete, but that will change. As you head out from Twinmere,
mm-hmm.
In the past, just looking at the geography and the other existing maps, you figured it would be the best idea to head southeast towards the continent of Miquelon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a couple options that are at your disposal.
Right.
From what you've considered, you could head south along the coast to the kingdom of Hesekere.
Okay.
From there, you could potentially resupply, regroup, things like that, before heading across the sea. You could head directly across the sea to Miquelon. Upon arriving, you would arrive in a more sort of desert, harsh condition, or you could make the longer journey all the way south to the west coast of Miquelon.
How many days worth of food and water do we have just on hand?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Each of you have 10 rations.
As a ship.
Oh, as like a ship.
Everybody will be fine for how long?
Everybody is going to be fine for a month.
Oh, that's a nice.
Because I don't have any personal rations.
My months
are
different. That is 20 days.
Okay.
20 days.
20 days. Cool.
Yeah.
How long does it take to get to, is it Miquelon?
Miquelon? Yeah, I have a map.
Oh, here. Wait. No, no. What was the first one?
Hesekeri.
Hesekeri.
The South Kingdom of.
That's probably our best bet. And then go kind of around.
You could make. Who's got navigators or cartographers?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've got navigators.
Yeah, make
as
a.
As well as cartographers.
Make an intelligent navigators check for me.
22.
Oh, jeez. I think I should have picked a better map for this. You know.
Sorry, 21.
21.
My bad math.
You know that if you were to head directly to Miquelon,
mm-hmm.
From Twinmere, where you are,
yeah.
Take about a week.
Okay.
If you were to go all the way to Hesekeri, you're looking at probably 4 weeks.
4 weeks? Holy crap.
And is a week in your world the same 7 days?
Yeah, I should probably get that right. I do mean like in like our world,
7 days.
So 7 days.
So 14 days versus 28.
14 days.
So we have to do the 14 then.
Yeah.
You could potentially do pit stops along the coast. Of Jenaheim.
Okay. I was just thinking, because you said Miquelon was like the deserty spot.
Yeah.
So is there a place to like fuel up? That's not the right word.
There would be, yeah.
Yeah?
There are major cities in the coast.
Okay.
One of them is 7 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's head toward the southeast, going towards Miquelon.
Right towards it then?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we may as well. If we see an island, we may make a stop.
Okay. For sure.
But then
I'm here
take
to travel, love.
Days.
I'm not here to make any decisions.
Right, well.
We will go where you go.
That's more
fair.
Polite way of putting it. My apologies.
I just like help with some decisions, that's all.
Once we're
it's
a little
a group
bit,
effort.
Once we're a little bit more organized, I'll give you a tour and introduce you to the crew. But for now, I've got to get some stuff organized.
All right.
And I'll turn and just start shouting commands at various people.
Okay. And with every order comes an appropriate crew response as they... as hands go on deck, and the ship starts to wheel, going from facing north to facing southeast, pointing its way across the sea. Feel free to go ahead and roleplay for a little bit. I have some random tables that I need to fill in here.
All right.
Just some random encounters.
Well, unfortunately, this is normally when I go to bed, so I don't know how much roleplay you'll get out of me, considering I need to, not sleep, but I need to stare into the dark abyss of my mind for 4 hours.
That's fair.
Once,
do you think your sleeping will change?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Because you'll probably want someone awake during the entire evening.
Oh, that is true. That's true.
Dekka, where are the quarters for sleeping?
Yeah, after sort of getting the crew organized, I'll be like, right, I'll show you to your quarters then.
All right.
And I imagine they have something a little more private than the crew quarters.
Yeah, so
but
ship map. Below deck, towards the front, is typically where kind of a communal dining area is.
Cool.
So that's sort of 4x4 pinched off point in the ship. Has sort of been repurposed for your companions.
Cool.
And it's been more, and it's kind of been renovated so that the dining area is more underneath in the cargo area.
Cool.
All right.
So yeah, I'll lead them down there.
Well, this just looks absolutely lovely.
Please make yourself at home.
Well, I will, and then I will sleep. And then after the 4 hours that I have gone by, would you love to introduce me to your crew?
That'd be lovely.
Wouldn't it just?
As you make your way,
Downtown walking fast, faces
downtown,
past, and we're homebound.
Downtown mm-hmm. walking slowly so that you don't fall down the stairs.
Yeah.
You reach underneath the ship, and you're immediately met with a voice that goes, "Well, howdy!"
Oh boy, it's going to be one of these.
And Decker, you're face-to-face with Cooper, your kobold crew member.
Right, Cooper, until I properly introduce you, please refrain from harassing our guests.
Hi, Captain, I will not harass your guests. You have guests.
Yeah, these three fine ladies that you're seeing right in front of you.
Well, you'll have to beg the pardon of my forwardness, but you're really pretty, like all of you.
Yeah, some of us more than others, and I give a wink to my sister.
Did you compliment me just now?
Sure.
He looks you dead in the face, Captain, and goes, right, back to work. Can do. Have you seen Zeke? I can't find him anywhere.
Is he not in the kitchen?
No.
Right, I'll see if I can track him down for you.
Okay.
Do you need help finding him?
Please.
I'll certainly help you.
If you could help me, that would be super cool.
I'd be happy to.
Would I know, is there, because I know Cooper absolutely loves Zeke.
Yeah.
Is that reciprocated? Would Jameson know that?
Ezekiel mostly tolerates Cooper.
Gotcha.
But does admire his eagerness and willingness to
okay,
learn.
So
he can handle Cooper probably in small doses.
He'll never admit it, but he's super good friends with him, is what I'm picking up.
He won't admit it, but he's comfortable with him.
So like he would miss it if Cooper were gone, is what I'm trying to say.
Most definitely.
Cool. Yeah. Good to know.
I take a nap, except I don't sleep. I just stare off into the void, into the darkness.
You make your way to the front of the ship, going through a door into an area that's actually got some hammocks sort of strung up underneath the bow of the ship. And after a short while, Helen shows up and opens up the bag of holding and just deposits your chest onto the ground.
I will magically twirl so that I am in my pajamas, because that's what my outfit can do.
Cool.
And then I will probably just take a knee and then meditate like that.
Yeah, you fall asleep.
Wow, a trance.
You trance in the hammock. It's cozy.
No, I'll be just kneeling.
Okay, for sure.
That's interesting. I've never thought about a trance as
anything but sleeping.
Yeah, just because it's the long rest mechanic, essentially. So
yeah.
I'll just kneel down, put my hands on my my thighs, and
hurt your knees.
No, I've been doing this for 130 years.
It works for you. So.
Yeah, I'd like to help Cooper find Zeke.
For sure. Yeah, go ahead and roll. Perception with disadvantage, because you don't know what Ezekiel looks like.
Can I ask Cooper? Cooper, what does Zeke look like?
Well, he's really tall, and he's real handsome, and he makes good food, and he leans in, which is funny because he's a kobold. He's quite short.
I kind of kneel down just so I can get more close to him as well.
And he goes, "We're like brothers. We got dragon blood."
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
Rough.
I'm sure that will make things quite easy. Is his skin like mine, fleshy, or is it scaly like yours?
What a question.
He kind of like reaches.
Does he got fleshy skin?
He kind of reaches out and kind of like reluctantly sort of like pats your forearm.
Oh, no.
And he goes, "Wow. So are you like, this might be kind of weird, but what are you?"
Well, I suppose this is the first time you might have seen someone like me.
Yeah.
I am.
He's kind of lost in this like trance just looking at you. Like
me and my
aren't we all?
Me and my sister, Siliqui, the lovely, lovely one that wants to go sleep, or trance. We are drow. We came from the nether.
He kind of takes his hand off and kind of steps back. He's like, "I may or may not have heard, like, stories."
Unfortunately, a majority of the stories are true, but that is one of the reasons why we wanted to leave.
He immediately perks up and he goes, "Well, you know, Captain trusts you. That's enough for me. Let's go find Zeke."
All right.
Since I now have a better description of him, can I just use the roll I just used? Would you still like me to use disadvantage?
No, just use your straight roll.
Okay, because I got a 23.
you make your way about the bottom of the ship, and in that back area, that large sort of 3x3.
Okay, yeah.
You go in there, and that's where you can see there's clearly a galley. There's a dining table. There's a kind of like a rotisserie stick and like a little oven. And there's a cupboard. And as you're sort of looking around, you definitely hear breathing. Mm. And you go over to a particularly like large cabinet,
mm-hmm.
and you hear the breathing coming from inside.
You open this door. You can see that wedged into this into this cabinet is this tall, red, scaly figure with sort of... He has sort of whiskers on the top of his mouth, and he's dressed in what looks to be an apron and underneath like a fine set of noble clothes. And he kind of is sort of staring straight ahead and then kind of jerks his head down to the right so he's facing you. And he goes, hello?
Are you Zeke? Ezekiel? By chance?
First time talking to a dark elf. Who might be asking?
I am Jennifer. I have a certain... joining your... I'm joining Evangeline's expedition, along with my sister.
Yes, Jameson and... Jameson and Eret mentioned you would be joining us.
Yes, yes.
Yes, Ezekiel, pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you.
I am the cook. I will be delighted to serve you on this voyage.
Ah, all right. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. Cooper was certainly right. Cook does have quite a handsome face.
His eyes widen immediately, and he goes, what? Did you help him look for me? And immediately Cooper's like, you found him! You found Zeke! And he, like, pushes his way between your legs, and he goes,
Ezekiel. He was quite worried about you, Zeke.
And Ezekiel grimaces and goes, is that true? And immediately, with your passive insight, you're like, Ezekiel was hiding from Cooper.
Okay.
And you just blew his cover.
Oh, his okay. 5 moments of peace.
I guess I instantly just kind of look down at him. I kind of make like a sort of expression where I'm just like, sorry.
he kind of nods like reassuringly and just kind of steps out of the cabinet.
I'll make way for him.
And just flexes his shoulders a little bit, kind of stretches, and he goes, well, that was fun while it lasted. All right, Cooper, let's go. And he's like, what are we doing? He's like, you've already forgotten. I'm teaching you how to make stroganoff. And Cooper goes, wow, really? What is that? He's like, I've already explained it thrice.
Good band, thrice.
Good day, Jennifer.
Lovely meeting you. Goodbye to the two of you.
And he goes, bye.
I look forward to your stroganoff. Is that what it is?
He kind of, you pique his interest, and he turns and looks over his shoulder as he walks away, and he goes, that's correct. It's quite delectable, I can assure you. And he opens some cabinets and starts fiddling with some stuff.
All right, I will make my way out and maybe just explore the rest of the cabin.
Okay, yeah.
4 hours later.
Yeah, yeah, I'm waiting for that. The next big thing for me is introduce a crew.
Yeah, okay. I'll just be up on the deck.
I'll probably be on the helm while I'm waiting.
Yeah, a lot of what you're doing, is pointing out maps, mapping them together. Eret's sort of like checking up and kind of issuing commands when Decker, you're otherwise conversing with Evangeline. Just kind of plotting your course. But yeah, anything else you guys wanted to do?
Not really. Meet the crew.
I wake up with a little bit of chill, so I am going to change my outfit. Because I might as well.
Oh, man.
That's one of my favorite things that, Nick, you've allowed me to do.
Yeah.
I am going to do a little spin and turn my my outfit into a blue turtleneck sweater dress. And I'm going to roll my sleeves up, and I have a belted waist and some high-heeled boots. And I'm going to strut out to, after my restful blackness... I am going to walk onto the deck and look for my captain.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, you find him at the helm.
Hello.
How was your nap?
You know, same as it's been for the last forever.
I guess that's good to hear.
Sure. Anyways, we have people to meet, don't we? Unless you've done it without me, then I'll be very
nope,
cross with you.
I specifically waited for you. Eret, you want to get on the helm while I introduce the crew?
I don't see why not.
Right, front and center, everyone.
Okay. Oh, sorry, everyone? You did just want me on the helm.
You on the helm, yes.
I like to think that Jennifer is already on the top of the... what's the top of that? Top of the ship, where everyone is.
Just on deck.
On deck. Thank you. She's on deck with everyone.
We're going to
well.
Need to learn some terms.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Here we go.
Flashcards.
Cool. So I'm just going to kind of... go through the list.
I'm not writing this down.
Right, so you've all already met First Mate Erit. He's the one up on the helm. He'll be anything I can't help you with, I'm sure he can.
With kind of like a deadpan stare, he just kind of throws his hand up and goes, yo!
Moving on, we have our cook, Ezekiel Kiskun. He's the dragonborn you see here.
Yeah, he kind of nods his head and he goes, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to meet you all. If we could hurry this up, Captain, that'd be great. I do have meals cooking downstairs. They might burn.
Well, you're already done, so you can go.
Okay! I'd love to meet you, ladies! And he runs, and Cooper starts to fall out of line to go chase him.
Cooper! Just a minute.
But I'm learning how to make stroganoff!
You can go in a moment. Next up, we have the twins, Ethic and Nan Fairbeard.
Oh,
or Fairbraid. My apologies. They're just sort of crew.
Just sort of crew. You can see standing side by side.
Oh, sorry, no, I got that wrong. Our boatswain is Ethic, and our carpenter is Nan.
They both respond in the exact same tone. It's like, howdy, howdy. They're decently well-built human men. They both have grizzled, kind of brownish-reddish beards and hair. They look almost completely identical.
Hmm.
Well,
one of you should probably get a different colored shirt.
they both chuckle in unison. No. And they both, but without looking at each other, they both put up their fists and fist bump.
I like to think that I got them wrong for this. I introduce Ethic as Nan and Nan as Ethic.
Okay.
Great.
You'd like to think?
I don't know. Jameson's not sure. Next up, we have a Selrael Ferris. You can call her Sal.
Gotta have to find a
she'll
card.
She'll be one of the general crew. She's pretty good at answering questions. Haggis McGruff.
She doesn't really answer. She's just this half-elven woman just kind of tips her head.
Yeah. Haggis McGruff, one of my kinsmen.
Haggis! I think you call Haggis. Come on around here, you call me Gussie.
I do call you Gussie, but I figured I'd give him your name.
Aye, that's right. You know this man here's my cousin. We go back a little ways. You know, I used to beat his ass around the block.
Yeah, but now I beat your ass, so...
Well, it's more of like...
Different times.
We give and take some, but I mean before. In the long run, I beat his ass. He's just a matter of statistics, really.
Anyway, he sometimes gets on the helm, mostly helps out with Zeke whenever mealtimes come around.
He extends his hand out to you, Evangeline.
Mm-hmm.
Do you take it?
Yeah.
He immediately starts placing kisses on your hands. He goes, oh. Lovely to meet you, dearest lady.
That's enough of that, Gussie.
It's lovely to meet you, too. But I will be taking my hand back now. Thank you.
And
I'm just
going to
take, like, 5 steps back.
He goes, can't take the kisses back, though, my sweet.
Great.
There's a female human up next. This here is Esme Wolf. She'll be another one of those general crew members.
She's got kind of like a barrette on. She nods and she goes, hello?
Mr. Tall, Dark, and Scary here is Milik.
Which one was that one? Your accent makes that very, very difficult to hear.
Milik.
Thank you.
Milik. He's our local doctor. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name. I fuck it up every time. he's a Kalashtar.
He goes,
a Kalashtar?
No sense of formality then, Captain. Milika Halikosh is a...
Does that doctor, Milik?
He looks at you sort of in a confused manner, and he goes, in training, I dabble in the medicinal and the arcane.
All right.
He sort of...
Just questions.
Yeah. He looks a little bit nervously towards the two of you, Dark Elf ladies. He's kind
with
of...
With good reason.
he's kind of adorned with braids and beads. He's got kind of a looking like a very arcane sort of robe. He has like a necklace with various like bones and beads on it. You can see that over top of his robe, he also has that additional cloak that Erit was using earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That's it belonging to him.
Wonderful.
Next in the line, you've already met Helen, Mountain Dwarf. She's our local weapons expert.
Oh, good to see you again. How are you enjoying the ship?
Oh, loving it.
Beautiful. That's great.
It's a gorgeous ship.
Isn't that? Yeah, I didn't build it, but I do appreciate a good ship when I see one. It's exciting, really.
Next in line, we have Cooper. He's our Cooper.
Howdy. He extends his hand. I'm Cooper.
If you don't...
Cooper, you can go run off now.
Really?
Very much so.
We've already met you. I do believe.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Have fun with your Broggedy Boffinoff. Stroganoff?
Stroganoff.
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 What's that?
The food you're supposed to be learning to
just
make.
Just go help Zeke.
I forgot I'm supposed to be helping Zeke make food! And he just darts.
He's if you don't know what a adorable, Cooper is, he makes the barrels.
Oh, I'm well aware.
Okay, just making sure.
It's like Doppler shifted as he runs away. He goes, I make barrels! As his little feet just like across the deck.
We have up next is Jürgen. He's sort of our assistant to Helen. He's a smart one.
You're the one that blew up that carriage.
So you noticed, did you?
No, I'm pretty sure that most of the town noticed.
He chuckles. You can see this short-sleeved and also well-muscular dwarven man has thick glasses. The sides of his hair is shaved, and the top of his hair is longer but brought back into a bun. He pushes his glasses up on his face and composes himself, and he goes, then I suppose I did my job very well.
10 points to you.
Hmm. All right. Reaching the end of the line, we have the wood elf, Ava Raylar. She's our lookout. She spends most of her time in the crow's nest.
She just nods.
And finally, last but certainly not least, is Theon Murray, a male human.
He's got a piece of straw in his mouth and just goes, hello, they told us you'd be bringing you ladies on board.
Do you have a problem with that?
It's bad luck taking a woman onto the sea.
Not on my boats, it isn't.
Best not to.
He goes, well, I wouldn't want to be anything other than blunt, but I have heard the stories of the Dark Elves. That being said, it's not my decision. As long as Jameson trusts you, I'm gonna have to trust you myself. We serve each other here, and we get along. We find out who we really are in certain situations.
That's the way I like it.
All right.
All right, all you back to work.
He just kind of nods his head, puts his hand on his scimitar, and just kind of saunters off to the front of the boat.
Sorry, who are the names of the two twins?
Ethic and Nan. E-T-H-I-A.
It's almost as if Ethan just used his name.
And Ethic almost. Is the carpenter?
Ethic.
We don't know. He's one of two things.
Yeah.
The carpenter Ethic. And the boatswain. So the carpenter...
is Nan.
Yeah, but we can't tell who's who. No, so Ethic and Nan are either the boatswain or the carpenter.
100% they switch jobs from time to time. The boatswain is technically the one higher up. He's in charge of repairs on the boat, and the carpenter is more his assistant, but they probably switch jobs very often.
As the crew starts to disperse, who you think is Ethic, who was introduced as Ethic, walks past you, Evangeline, and he goes, Captain got it wrong again. Gestures to his chest and goes, Nan, okay? Don't forget it.
I will try not to.
Well, you'd be doing better than the captain.
Okay. Well, that's good.
He kind of salutes you and goes, enjoy yourself. We got a long trip ahead of us.
Yes, oh, yes,
and,
we do.
Don't break our ship, if at all possible.
I will try not to, but I don't really care in the grand scheme of things.
It's just customary. I have to make sure I do this disclosure, tell everybody. Because then they can't say that I didn't tell them so.
That's fair.
Okay, I got work to do. Okay. And he just saunters off.
Have fun.
That was a lot of characters to do in a short amount of time.
Yep, but now we got it out of the way and we'll never do it again.
Okay.
I'm sure there'll be refreshers as to who's who.
Totally.
My only problem is there's a wood elf on board. And not that I have a problem with wood elves, but wood elves have a problem with me.
Mm-hmm.
With us, remember.
There is a wood elf.
I don't really worry about if they have a problem with you, because you can take care of them. I, on the other hand, weigh 90 pounds.
Did,
You know that I have my there's also a half anywhere elf. Around you.
Sayriel is also a half elf.
Yes, but okay. I don't know if she's been raised by elves or humans.
That is totally fair.
If you wanted to, you could have potentially rolled an insight on Ava.
Why not?
The wood elf. Yeah.
I haven't rolled poorly yet. Might as well see if it's now.
Nope, it's not. It's a 16.
Damn. A 16? From what you can determine, you gain like a surface impression that she's at least a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's fair.
My people usually go out and steal her children, so... Yeah. Whoops.
And it's going to be an interesting voyage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to take care of anything else before we kind of jump forward?
I am literally just keeping my eyes on the skies. Like, Okay. Skies, I'm looking for rock formations. Like, I'm trying. It's a little advantageous, but I'm trying to write down, like, every little islandy bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
I do want to address the party in the matter of, right, so I don't expect you to do much today, but if you want to get a jump start, you can, but we all sort of try to pull our weight around here, so...
Understood.
If you want to have a day to rest and be ready to pick it up in tomorrow, we'll pair you off with someone and start teaching you showing you the ropes, as they say.
I would very much love that. Agreed.
Right?
That is fine with me, as long as I have time to navigate and to draw my maps.
You'll have plenty of time for that.
Okay.
Okay. And you spend the rest of the day just sort of getting the lay of the ship and meeting the crew, getting different impressions, talking to some for longer, talking to others for less amounts of time. The ones you can get the attention for. Evangeline, as you scout about the ship moving, you don't see any new features, but you make it your mission to mark down every distance traveled, logged,
mm-hmm.
so that you can, once you reach Miquelon, you can place it perfectly on your
atlas. I know
exactly
how far we've been traveling and how long it will take.
Exactly. Jameson, you keep your crew ready.
Yep.
You keep them working. And the first day goes by with nothing new, nothing very interesting. Evangeline, you watch as the sun dips in the west, and dips over Jenaheim, dips in the distance behind you. As night rolls around, the crew keeps the ship running in shifts.
I'm assuming there's a, like, they're all small shifts though, right?
They're all in 4-hour shifts.
Okay, cool.
Oh, I just have a question, technically. So, because I want to log every mile that we kind of go, would somebody be logging that for me so I can sleep?
Well, if you wake up right before the sunset, or right in the last hour of darkness, and you go to bed right at the first hour of darkness, you could use the stars to generate how far you've gone, as long as you have a... what's that thing called? A
sextant?
Oh, a sextant, yeah. If you have a sextant, you could see how far you've gone.
So I'd figure that out with the captain then.
Yeah, so I will come wake you.
Thank you. Well, I'll be up anyways.
Sextant.
I'm awake.
I get
sunrise.
It.
Sunrise.
Yes, it's funny.
It has the word sex in it,
oh
so
my
it's
goodness.
Funny.
So immature.
It's pretty great, though. Okay, the sun goes down, and then the night rolls around. Nothing overly interesting. On the first day.
I think I spend most of the night just staring off the front of the ship.
Yeah. And with every sort of wave that laps against the side of the ship at night, you almost seem to hear the moon sing off of every wave, giving you various bolts of inspiration and courage that Elistre is somewhere, at mm-hmm. least guiding you. Maryliss, as you, or Jennifer, as you look over the railings and you look at the water, while you don't feel inspiration as much as your sister, you start to... You can't help yourself but thinking back. You can't help thinking back at the horrors you've had to endure to escape the nether. And the more you stare at the waves, the more you become troubled. And eventually find peace in knowing your sister's close by.
And you then, sleep at night, don't you?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. The morning of the second day... Again, these random tables have proved to be not overly fruitful, and nothing seems to happen. Very interesting.
I'll spend most of the day then learning slowly on what it takes to do a ship. A bunch of this work, though, is just keeping the ship wet. Wet, and like maintaining sails. But it's not a busy occupation.
I think I'm pairing you off with one of the twins after giving you like a crash course.
Yeah, I'm weak though.
Hmm?
I'm like, if they require physical labor, I am
okay.
I have the strength of a child. Although I am a healer. Do you want me to pair off with?
If you're, oh yeah, that might be good. Okay, yeah, you can even pair off with Melik.
Yep.
I'll give
carpentry. Do her. She's huge.
Yeah. So I'll throw you in with
Jennifer
with one of the twins. You can honestly
do whatever.
You can pair off with Eret for most of your training because you already know him.
He's the
Eret's the first mate.
Oh, sorry.
He'd be really good at giving you like a.
I know who Eret is.
I would hope so.
Like eventually, I believe Evangeline's going to be the second mate, right? Like the one who, if you two die and whatever.
Potentially. Oh, probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Neato.
Right now, I kind of want it to be Zeke just because I really like him. He's like the third guy if...
Oh, yeah. That's totally fair, but eventually she should surpass him.
Yeah.
Okay. And very similarly, did you want to... So yeah, you all pair off. Did you want to potentially go through like those encounters a little bit?
No, it's just it is a boring travel.
Yeah, you begin to partner off. I know who was partnered with Malik.
I am.
He's not easy to break in. You definitely.
Do you want me to do a persuasion check to be like, hey, I'm not like other drow. I'm actually, I probably hate them as much as you do, buddy.
Why don't we go through that really really quickly? So you make your way below deck. And in Malik's sort of sleeping area, he's the only one who seems to have used the crates and barrels to set up various bedside tables and actual places where he can sit his equipment. You can see all kinds of things that are both medicinal and arcane. And as you sort of approach him, he takes his hand and he pulls his hair behind his ear and he goes, "Oh, hello."
Hi. Sorry, Captain has asked me to work with you. He's seen me heal,
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Right.
And at some point today, I have to take a nap for 4 hours, but other than that, I'm kind of in your charge.
Right, then. I'm quite busy. I don't know if really me sparing the time to teach you is really in the question. Perhaps I should speak with the captain personally.
If you are truly busy helping people who... know really, really well how to do their jobs, and you are truly busy concocting potions, I understand that. If your problem, though, stems from my heritage, I'd rather you discuss that with me. You're not going to do well with a middleman.
Do you want to make an insight check?
Yes. Ooh! Dirty 20.
Dirty 20.
Nice.
He's definitely on the defense because you're a drow.
Do you know why I'm on this journey? I'm blind for most of the day from the sun, and yet I've decided to take a journey through probably the harshest sunlight that I could have exposed myself to. I'm on this journey because I left the Nether, and I didn't do that on my own free will. And I'm not going to get into it. I don't know you. But you should know that I didn't leave to use the Nether's abilities to then make myself a personal gain. I left because I was forced to. And for that, I have probably the similar opinions on my people as you do. And I would rather you work with me for my character than for the color of my skin.
He sort of fidgets, biting at his lip, definitely processing what you just said. And he goes, I do recognize that.
But tell you what, give me this first 5 days, first 6 days. And if by the time we've... Come to our next location if you really, really don't want to work with me. I'll find someone else to work with.
I don't work with most people very well. And you would be correct that I have my dispositions towards the Dark Elves.
How about
what I
watch?
Want to know is how can I know for sure that you won't stay true to your people's, one of your people's greatest abilities, and that is prolonged deception.
I am very familiar with that. I can't guarantee you anything, and I wish I could. And if you want me to just watch, I can just watch. I can stay out of your hair. And the more that I prove myself, the more you can give me responsibilities. And until then, let's keep a healthy distance. I don't want to... Sure. A wonderful 6 feet COVID-free distance apart.
Lovely. He wants to make an insight check against you.
Sure.
What's your 10 plus your deception mod?
Oh, that's huge, because it's a 15.
Okay. He only got a 14. So he kind of, he sits there again. Seemingly his nervous tick is to bite against his lips. It's hard to get a bead on you.
I work very hard on that.
I do believe he's actually partially telepathic.
Oh. What? Yeah, I can't. That is like saying, I believe he has a third arm. That should have been in his character description. Yeah.
I'm not overly... Well, let me double check that really quick, because if that's not on here, that needs to be...
You just read your mind and be done with it.
Aren't Kalashtar from, like... They're not from Eberron, are they?
They are from Eberron.
I do not know what a Kalashtar is. Tall, I googled it, and he looks human. So.
Yeah, tall, dark, human, innately arcane.
Yeah. Innately arcane.
He sort of leans forward over one of his tables, and he puts his hand on a small bottle, and he puts it forward. And inside, it's kind of a silvery, sparkling, bluish sort of fluid. And he looks down, and he goes, "Do you know what this is?"
Can I do an arcana check?
Yes, you may.
16.
16. You think it's some kind of truth serum, potentially.
Look, you're one of Jameson's men. I think it's a truth serum, but I will drink anything you hand me.
He goes, as much as I do like your thinking, I just want to make sure what your level of adeptness is before we get into this.
Oh.
And what starts is a series of him starting to go through different pieces of arcane equipment, different alchemical ingredients that he has, as you start a series of...
I should have done a herbalism check. Dang it!
You can do that as well if you want.
Well, I don't want to roll worse than 16, so I'll keep the herbalism check.
You may not know as much about the herbalism stuff as the arcane stuff that you're picking on, but he's clearly showing you little bits of what he knows and getting you on board.
Wonderful.
Okay. Anybody else really quickly for the second day?
No.
Okay.
Pretty standard.
I mean, I'm hanging out travel. With Garrett, so like,
That's fine. It seems to.
I guess I could probably, because I'm going to be with Nan or Ethic or Ethic.
One of them.
Okay. Yeah.
You don't know which.
Up to them if they reveal which one they are.
Okay.
Okay, you find it pretty hard. Roll me an investigation check for me, please.
All right.
It's going to be real hard, buddy.
Oh, no, that's not what it is. Investigation? That's a
10.
You approach one of the twins, and at least, I'm gonna roll some dice here. At least three times throughout the day, you get them wrong. Nice. And even then, you're not sure if you got them wrong, or if they were completely bullshitting you.
That's hilarious.
One of them gets like a small scrape on his hand and introduces himself as Nan, and then you go, and you're like, that one has a scrape on his hand, that one's Ethic, and then they both have scrapes on their hands.
Oh boy.
Great. And while the commitment. Evangeline and Jameson and Eret are manning the ship and are continuing to map their way through the Dugan Sea, while Siliqui, you're learning away with Malik, and Jennifer, you're getting completely bullshitted by the Farbraid twins. The sun sets on the second day, Evangeline making a note. And it's the third day where things get a little bit interesting.
Oh.
As the sun rises on the third day is when you hear Ava call down from the crow's nest. She goes, Captain, we have a ship on the horizon.
What are the colors?
She's not flying any, Captain.
Right. Right. Rouse the crew. Let's prepare for the worst.
All right, Captain. And immediately orders start going about. Siliqui, you are roused from your teachings with Malik.
Mm-hmm.
Hands are on deck. Weapons are on standby as the ship starts to come into view. As the ship starts to get closer, Ava goes, I'm starting to see colors, Captain. Does appear to be a passenger vessel. There's just one problem, Captain. I don't see anybody on board. Nobody's moving around. Ship is not changing course.
Do I have a spyglass?
Yeah.
Cool.
Wow, that's expensive shit. It's the most expensive shit in all of D&D.
Really?
Yeah, it's 1,000 gold pieces.
Oh. Can I retract that statement?
No, that's, I think it's an in-game joke from the D&D creators, because there's no reason that a spyglass needs to be 1,000 gold, but that's it always enough. Is.
Yeah, I wanna take a look then through whatever magnification device...
Okay.
Just available to
just
me.
Whatever.
A glass bottle.
Just my hand.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead and make a perception check, please.
Can I zoom in on these
I would love
things?
To. That's a 15.
15, yeah. Sure enough, you see a long ship. And I mean that in classification. It is a very, very long boat that doesn't seem to be... it seems to be brandishing minimal sort of weapons. It seems to have various sort of enclosures that look to be like living quarters on board. You don't see figures moving about, which is oddly suspicious.
Do I see figures at all? Like dead or otherwise?
Your perception was...
It was a 15.
15? No.
Okay. Miss Dumont, it's your expedition, so I'll leave the decision up to you if we go check this out or not.
I mean... I would say if we pass by and something seems suspicious, then maybe we should go check it out. But if we're just passing by...
This seems suspicious.
It seems suspicious?
There's
right.
No one on board.
Then we will check it out.
Eret is suddenly, like, ghosted, like, right behind you, Captain. He goes, what's the sitch, Captain?
We got seemingly a ghost vessel on the... What side is it on?
Port.
Port side.
It's all right. What makes you think it's a ghost?
Well, nobody's on it.
All right. Sending an away party, then?
I think we'll get a little closer, see if we can see anything else, and then, if not, probably.
Get our new guests for a little bit of a scouting party?
That would be probably for the best.
Ooh, right, how then. Exciting.
Gussie, bring us around. I imagine he's on the helm right now.
He's right at the bow. He goes, Captain, I'm all the way up here.
Fuck, what time is it? Who's on the helm?
He immediately starts hoofing it down the ship towards the
Hold
helm.
Hold on, Gussie. Who's on the helm?
Who's on the helm? That is an excellent question. Eret was on the helm.
Oh, so no one right now?
No one's on the helm.
Right, Gussie, get on the helm and then bring us around.
He stops as you tell him to wait and then immediately goes. He's like, right, Captain! And as you begin to approach this mysterious ship, you still don't see any figures. It does not change course. And the party, including Eret, is... roused to the edge of the edge of the Odyssey, and you begin to make preparations to board this bizarre ship. Thank you for listening to this episode of Short Rest for the Wicked. I hope you guys really enjoyed listening. Go ahead and give us a follow. We have a Facebook page, which is Short Rest for the Wicked. We also have an Instagram page, which is also Short Rest for the Wicked. You can also follow us on Twitter, just Short Rest. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.